Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm excited to have Siobhan Lindley on the show today. Siobhan is the CEO and co-founder of Ion Learning. Well, Siobhan, I am so glad we were able to make this work. You're all the way in San Diego, beautiful San Diego, and I am in cold St. Louis right now. But thank goodness for technology, right? Where we can do these kind of things.
It is such a blessing and a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is. And I cannot wait for our listeners to hear your story. I told you before we even started, you are a remarkable woman. So as I am digging in and getting prepped for our interview, I'm finding all these things and I'm just like, wow, I mean, you have done so much. And I can't wait to share some of those things with the listeners. But before we get into that, tell me about the way you grew up.
I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And my father is from Iran, immigrated from there when he was around 20 years old. And met my mom in a pool hall in Oklahoma City. And my mom's American, Christian. And that experience of this unique family dynamic really shaped kind of those early roots of how to honor and love and value two very differing points of view. And honestly, what grew out of that and what bonded them together and ultimately us as a family and what I believe strongly now is that core value of faith in something that's greater than all of us. And that's really what I learned to really value and honor and recognize because of that unique experience.
Well, see, I did not know that part about you. So it all makes sense now with the work that you're doing now. And I'm not going to give it away because I want to get into that. But at a very early age, you kind of saw people that came from different backgrounds, different cultures, different experiences, right? And coming together. So that is great. Again, you're the baby, right? Of how many? How many siblings did you have?
I have three others.
So for St. Louis people, Aresh, Aminis, we all have been there to buy our pool tables and our ping pong. We have bought so much from Aminis, but Siobhan is Aresh's baby sister. But, you know, Siobhan, I told you, this is really something I didn't know about you either, that you actually have a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics from the University of Texas. So what was it? Because with us being in STEM, we're always talking about how can we get more women, young girls interested in STEM type careers? Because those are definitely some of the careers of the future. You know, it's just going to continue to escalate, right? The demand for IT and these STEM type careers are so important, but traditionally women have just not been in those careers as much. So what inspired you to go that route?
Now, education was paramount in my family. You know, that's how my dad came to the United States and with nothing and ended up getting his PhD in finance. And so that was always reinforced for us. Like there was no, are you going to go to college or not? It was like, that's just what you do. And so being a perpetual learner as being a foundational component for a successful life was instilled from the very beginning. So for me, it was just a matter of, well, what am I really good at? And I was just always great at math. Solving problems always came easy to me. And those were the scores. I didn't have to study that hard, and I would get close to 100s on everything. And so when I was looking for a degree, honestly, I didn't even know that you could get a major in mathematics. I was applying to school, and if you are from the Middle East and many other countries, you know that it's like you're either a doctor or an engineer. Like, those were your two paths. So my dad always said, like, you're going to be an engineer. So I did internships as an engineer. I went to engineering camp, and I applied to 7 different colleges to get into the engineering degree path. I got into all of them, which was very cool. And I settled on University of Texas at Austin because it was far enough away that I wouldn't have to come home to visit every weekend, but I could still drive my car and, and it wouldn't be that far, but it was like far, just far enough.
Yes.
I started in engineering, and I disliked it very much. I did not enjoy so many components of it except for the mathematics of circuitry. So I went to the career counselor, and they were like, why don't you just major in math? I was like, you can do that? Like, I didn't even know that was an option. So I switched, and that I found my home, and I loved every second of it. What's also super interesting about it was when I first got into the classes, they were fairly gender balanced. But by the time I graduated, I was one of 2 women to graduate with a Bachelor of Science in Mathematics. And that was the first time I really recognized that huge gender gap that exists. And then that would ultimately continue for the rest of my career. But that was the first moment where I was like, where'd they go?
Uh-huh. They dropped out. Maybe because they didn't have a mentor. They didn't have somebody saying, yo, you can do this. So yeah, we hear that a lot too, that they start out, but then they don't end up finishing, you know, those switch careers. So
yeah, there was a switch in career too. A part that came up was because I asked in a class, I'm like, where did the women go? I showed up to my junior year, I believe. And that's where the women started to not be as prevalent in class. And they said, well, many were getting teaching credentials to go become a teacher, and you know, only need a Bachelor of Arts. And now you're in the Bachelor of Science half, back half. And so that's where the women went to go get teaching credentials.
Sure. Well, okay. So you ended up starting your career in finance. So you actually probably followed your dad to some degree, right? So you were a financial advisor for a firm. I want to say, was it in California?
It was. It was a Wall Street based firm that had a San Diego location. My sister had just moved out to San Diego to work on her PhD. So when I got out of college, my parents were like, well, you should go to live in the city where you at least know one human and can be with her and look for your first career path. So that's how I got out to San Diego. And I was trying to figure out, I interviewed so many different types of companies that had anything financially related. But when I saw this particular job posting around being able to use mathematical skills to solve complex financial problems, but at the same time, be able to help families achieve their goals and to help guide them to make right decisions so that way they could send their kids to school, protect their family in case something was wrong, and for them to fulfill a retirement dream and travel. That just was like the meld of two, you know, helping people achieve their goals and finance at the same time. And I found my first path.
Perfect fit there. And then you excelled because you became the number one financial advisor. So what often happens is, you know, you were asked then, I believe, every new hire, they wanted you to train the new hires. Because you take your top performing person, you said, if we can just replicate that person. So then you started doing that, but you kind of had, I believe, Siobhan, like what you would consider an aha, because you said, I probably need a mentor now. But you look around and there were no other females, right? So you didn't have a female mentor, but that kind of was the precipice, I feel like, or the catalyst maybe to push you into a, kind of even what you're doing today. But you founded an organization called Women Evolution.
Yes, I did. So what ends up happening when you are at a moment where something is so out of integrity with what you're meant to do in your life, things start to break down, right? Health can start to deteriorate. You become unhappy. Things just aren't working out. And so those can be very frustrating, but those are all signs that something is out of alignment with what your core values are. And so I didn't have any of that recognition or hadn't done any of that leadership development work. But in hindsight, looking back, that's what was really going on. So at this time, you know, yes, I'm financially successful, but everything else was a disaster. 12-hour days, weekends, just grinding because it's a commission-based business. Like, that's it. You perform and close business to be able to make a living. And so that just was the culture of the industry. And it was told, right, the more you work, the more you are rewarded. Not that I believe that today, but that was what was instilled at that particular time. So when everything felt, although yes, financially was successful, but everything else was out of alignment, that's where I was so sick. I was getting bronchitis every single month. I was just, again, so unhappy. I happened to walk into the elevator that day to work and saw someone who I would normally run into on our way. And he worked across in another office across the way. And he was like, "How are you doing today?" And normally you would say, I would say, "I'm doing fine. You know, I'm great. How are you?" But this day I was like, "I'm not doing well. I am sick all the time and I don't know what to do." And he just gave me some advice there and opened up, and it really bonded us at that time. And that's where I first realized you got to tell people how you're feeling. You've got to be honest and real and authentic and genuine around where you're succeeding and where you're failing, because that's when you get to open up and people can support you in that way. And that was like the first, I would say, piece of mentorship advice that I got that I needed then to say, okay, there's something that is trying to tell me that I need to shift. So I started to seek out and recognize, well, what's missing in my life? What do I not have? And when I walked into my office, I saw all of these white men. There is no one else that's like me. No one else that really seemed to have or want a family or was talking about that either, but also a career. And that's when I said, okay, I need to go out and find diverse individuals that are leading in a different way that can inspire me, because I'm not getting it here in my workplace. So that's what set me out on this journey to go find others who have done this before that look different than what is around me right now.
Yeah. You were feeling some kind of rumbling in your soul that something just was not right. Your health was suffering. You're doing good on this leg of the stool financially, but then everything else was suffering. So when you feel that kind of angst in your spirit, it's like, it may be time to step back.
Absolutely.
And take a look at the big picture. Secondly, you got to tell people how you're feeling and be authentic about it. Authenticity is so important, right? But it does require some vulnerability there. And I think vulnerability is a very important trait. But really, if you don't tell people, then how do they know? And he spoke a word into you that day, and the word mattered. It was something that gave you the confidence then to go, no, I probably need to do a pivot. I need to do a shift here.
Absolutely. And when you are willing to talk about successes and failures, it humanizes you. And this has been what I have found, others have told me, has been the most inspiring thing about me, is my ability to talk about the challenges that I've overcome while I'm in the middle of it, in the past, and what's coming up for me, because it makes them feel like, one, they're not alone. And then it creates a safe space for them to open up as well. For many, it builds trust with us and it inspires them to move past or to seek help with things that they're facing with right now. The other really beautiful thing about telling our stories from just a neurological, chemical component is that, without digging into all those details of the exact chemicals that go on, but it creates this beautiful reaction in our brain and our body. And we are 22 times more likely to remember and to connect to people when we share stories. Our brains, they stop looking for what's different and they look to find what's similar. So this is just one of the greatest tools to use to create inclusion, is storytelling.
I love that, Siobhan. That is just beautiful. Morgan Nichols, not related to me. I wish you were. You know, she's got a quote out there that says, you know, make sure that you tell the story about the mountain you climbed or the adversity you overcame, because your story will become the part of someone else's survival kit in the future.
So beautiful.
And I think that's so beautiful because it's so true. And so I love that. So I want to get into a few of those challenges, but we need to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with Siobhan Lindley.
Are you a rising IT leader? Could you benefit from a network of like-minded peers? Let me introduce you to the St. Louis Technology Leadership Experience. This one-of-a-kind program gathers cohorts of IT professionals for three workshops: peer small group problem solving, one-on-one mentoring by IT executives, and multiple networking events. You'll be prepared for your next steps as an IT leader by gaining core leadership competencies and a strong, powerful network of peers. To apply for our next TechLX cohort, visit tpi.co/TLX.
So welcome back. Siobhan, I'm absolutely loving this conversation. And I realize that you and I probably need about 10 hours with one another to even scratch the surface here. You've already shared so many of the lessons that you've learned, but are there other ones that you would like to tell our listeners about?
From a entrepreneurial, even in someone who's in the corporate space, but a lot of times, you know, as being someone who's owned their own business for a long time and, you know, as you're growing a business, one of the biggest lessons that I had to learn the hard way. This is when I was still in the financial planning career business, and I knew that I wanted to get into helping create inclusive workplace cultures. And I had this opportunity to be a potential contributing writer for Forbes. And that was like, I knew that was going to catapult me to be able to go do my full passion, but I still was financially being supporting that passion with the financial planning business. And so I had one foot over here and one foot over here. And, you know, logical financial brain said, when you make enough money over here that equals the money you make over here, then that's when you make the shift, because that just is makes sense on paper. Well, I'm having this coaching session with this leadership coach, and she said, I don't know if Forbes is for you. What I do know is that your business and creating inclusive cultures and scaling the learning and development model and creating peer learning spaces, that is your soul path, and that financial planning is not, and you need to get out of that business. And I was like, well, how
am I going to support myself?
Do I do that now? Do you mean like 6 months from now? And this is what she said to me. She said, when things are right, they happen clear, easy, and fast. And so all you have to do is to take one step. And if that step is easy, you take the next step. And I know, like, now that sounds like the most simplistic thing in the world. But at the time, I'm like, well, how do I get rid of a financial planning business? The first thing I needed to do was to ask, who's going to take over my clients? That was what I was most concerned about. Who's going to take care of them with the same level of love and intention and respect? And so I had two people in mind. One's my husband, and he's been in business partner for years. So I knew him, but I also really wanted it to be a woman. I really wanted to have a nice chunk of my clients go to a woman. And so I had one in mind who I trusted, and I called her and I said, hey, would you be open to this? And she goes, that's so funny. I just was researching today to buy a book of business. And so within 5 minutes, I was like, well, okay, well, that was easy. I said, okay, my next step is to tell my colleagues that I'm leaving. So I went to the door next door. I walked in and I said, hey, I'm leaving financial planning. He's like, great.
That was easy.
That was easy. And I was like, so this is the kicker. And a fast forward to when I'm finally, my last step is putting my resignation letter to say I'm severing today on this date. That same day, I got the acceptance letter to be a contributing writer for Forbes.
Oh my goodness. Wow. That is wonderful. Just, great advice.
Well, I had to laugh. It was just that recognition when you look for those signs that this was the right decision, even though if on paper, the financially, but I had to create space. I can't overwhelm myself. Like, balance is a core value of mine. And so if I were to be running two successfully businesses, I would lose my mind, because I also had a baby and was pregnant and then had a second baby. And so I would have lost my marbles. So I needed to give up something in order to get something else.
It's so true. There's a verse in Isaiah, and I just love it. And it says, forget the past, because I'm ready to do something new. Mm. And one of our spiritual mentors is Dr. Richard Blackaby. And I'll never forget him saying one time, there may be something brand new that's on the horizon for you, a brand new assignment. If you're running 200 miles an hour, though, you have to make margin for something new. And that's why it's so important, I think, for us to be very centered and principled so that we can begin to say no to some things. I hate to say no because I am a pleaser. I love to please people. I want to help people, right? But the reality is you cannot always do that. So that kind of brings me to my next question, because I do believe that just as we have to have purpose in our businesses or organizations, we also have to have a personal purpose. So what is your purpose statement for your life, Siobhan?
My purpose is to inspire inclusion. And when I do that, others are able to fulfill their purpose and I'm able to live my purpose. So, you know, when I look at a company, when I serve companies, or if I'm talking to individuals, I know that innovation is at its greatest when we all, the collective, in all these differing viewpoints and perspectives are able to come and be heard and recognized and valued at the table. And if we do not have an inclusive culture, then we will not be able to innovate at our greatest capacity. We will not be able to achieve the missions that we are set out as an organization. So my goal is to inspire that inclusion so that we all can fulfill our purpose.
I love that. So every person, seriously, if you don't know what your purpose is, take some time to be introspective and think, what am I created to do? And then, like Siobhan said, go do it. Take that first step. What is it? The journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step. Love that. So that brings me up to what you're doing today with ION. So you got a very particular philosophy. And I know I'd read something that you said where it can't just be a half a day seminar for an organization. To change behavior, it's got to be more than that. So tell me about your philosophy. Tell me what you're doing with ION and why you believe small groups, diverse groups works the best.
So what we do at ION is we've developed a social learning platform. This is a new way to develop leaders remotely. You don't need to be in a classroom. And, you know, we've known for a really long time that the way that we deliver training in workplaces is not the most effective. Completion rates for programs are super low. On average, completion rates around 15% for online learning. But that's really the greatest tool that companies use to scale learning throughout a company, especially in a remote company where we are now. So, you know, companies are having to think about a new way of delivering learning. But from the beginning, learning hasn't really been the most effective structure. But what we do know when we look at research is that learning needs to be spaced out and repeated over time. It needs to change the way you think, how you feel, and what you do. You have to have time to go apply the skill and practice it, and then to come back and reflect personally, and then also within a safe environment with diverse peers, where together you hold each other accountable to follow through with everything that you say that you're going to do. This is what we know is the most effective way to learn. From the beginning of time, people have know that learning in small groups is the most effective way. Study groups in college, you know, schools are set up, you put people in small groups. But in the workplace, we haven't really, that has just very happened very grassroots. There hasn't been any technology platform yet until ION to help companies create, scale, measure, and manage small group diverse learning throughout an organization and really optimize that structure with a framework that says, this is how you have a course. You want to teach that course. This is how you break that course up. Here's where you make small group learning occur. Here's the cadence, the structure, and a management platform to help you do it all in one. And that's what we've been able to create.
Well, I mean, and you guys have got different modules. So do you want to talk about that at all? I mean, if say a company says, I understand we need to focus on D&I, but how do we even start? What would you say?
Looking at how an organization is doing training today is where you start, because you have to start with education. Education is the first paramount step. It's then how you deliver that education, which is going to create a framework for individuals to learn how to build trust with people who are different. That is the root issue that we have to solve. That's the mathematical problem. That's the systemic issue, is that as humans, we are wired to not trust difference, because you might kill me or eat me. my brain literally is scanning 24/7 to see what's like me that I can get close to me because that's safe. And everything else is regarded as a potential threat. That's just how our brains have developed. And now our brains have evolved and we have the capacity to choose inclusive behaviors and to choose to want to, you know, surround ourselves with people who are different, but it does go against our core nature as a species. And so we have to create optimal environments for people to learn how to build trust. And so education and training is the most effective way. So whether it's an onboarding, which everyone has an onboarding program when they hire someone, they have to learn. So put it in a structure where the first thing that happens is you place them into a group of 2 to 3 other peers who are in different departments, as different as you possibly can make them, and then have them hold each other accountable and meet after learning a certain amount of information. So maybe it's reviewing training manuals on something, or the core values of the organization, or the history of the organization, or learning about employees. And then you have them meet with this group virtually with webcams on if they feel safe to do so. And you give them discussion questions to guide that conversation. After they meet, they then go and learn something else. And it could be a book. You want them to learn a book? It could be a book. You want them to download resources, whatever you want them to learn. It could be a formal e-learning program that's fully baked and beautiful, or it could be as simple as some links on a website that they click around and then they meet with this group again. And you want this group to meet typically over around 6 sessions. And that structure alone, by putting diverse people into small, safe groups, no more than 4 in size, will create the space for people to be open to learning, to share their story. Remember, we started earlier with this podcast around how important storytelling is. This environment allows storytelling for people to open up safely because they don't think they're sabotaging their career doing it in a board meeting, but they'll do it in this small, safe group.
Sure.
So they'll tell their story, and that's where they start to realize how much more in common than we have different.
Yes.
And then that's where they get to practice inclusion in real time, challenge the biases that they may have had against people from different departments, different ages, different, anything different can cause a threat in our brain.
ION can lead you through all of this. You use artificial intelligence to even match the people. So the company doesn't even have to do that piece. I see a lot of other benefits and perks that come out of this. I bet you when companies engage with something like this, employee engagement probably goes out the roof.
100%. Literally, someone emailed us just 3 days ago saying, like, I've never wanted to work harder for a company in my life because I'm finally given a support system in the workplace. I feel like my ideas are being heard and valued. And this is what people have been craving and needing. That deep human connection is so important. And so this framework can work. So if you're just starting out, you don't need a technology to help you create the algorithms for massive amounts of groups. You know, we serve companies that are normally like 3,000 plus employees or more, but no matter what size, we do it. When we only had 4 employees, we started this because there's 4 of us or 3 of us. And we learn together in these groups and alternate between learning and small, diverse peer groups. And we've got a research study that backs this up. I would say if you want to dig into the nitty gritty on the research behind it, we've got a really cool research study that we spent 9 months on and some extraordinary results to share why this method is so powerful. And then the ION platform just helps optimize and scale it for any content. We also have content ourselves that we support organizations with. So let's say someone comes and says, hey, do you have anything off the shelf? We have curriculum that we've designed that's already locked and loaded that companies are focusing on. And it's all based on leadership development that has an inclusion focus. All of our courses have that because that's what we are most passionate about. But then we also help companies design their own, take courses that they have currently in place and help them adapt it to the ION framework and use our platform as well so that they can administer and scale that too.
Mm-hmm. I love every piece of what we've talked about. You know, Siobhan, this is something extra. So I have to ask you, and I think I know what you're going to say, but what is the something extra that every leader needs?
I believe leaders need to disrupt exclusionary behavior. They need to speak up when they see something or they experience or witness something where others are being excluded. and to leverage that position that they hold, the privilege. And privilege sometimes can cause people to feel funny. Privilege just means an advantage. You have an advantage because you have a certain position in an organization. And so to leverage our advantages and the power that we have to disrupt exclusionary behavior, to change processes and systems, to give a voice to someone else when they maybe don't necessarily have the same amount of position or authority as you do. So leveraging that, not being afraid to speak out about social issues and using our platforms that we have for good in this world. Like, businesses can serve all of those purposes. Like, you will be more successful as a business the more impact you can make on humanity. And I think that's really what people are waking up to right now in organizations, that they have a huge role in ending systemic inequities in this planet. And that's where we want to serve these individuals, because we believe that that's our highest leverage point. This is the area. So really, we want leaders to be equipped with the skill to do that. And that's actually what my TEDx talk is all about. So if you want to hear me talk about how to disrupt exclusionary behavior, you can just Google Siobhan Lindley TEDx talk and it'll pop up for you. But we can dig through some of those four steps now, or they can figure it out later.
Right. We'll have to do a part two. But tell me, is there something that's coming up, you know, where our listeners could get involved in, or that you'd want to tell them about?
To be honest, it's really about furthering education. Start with education as an organization. You do not have to have a 5-year strategic plan to get going. You can just acknowledge that maybe we have not been paying attention to this. That honesty and genuineness is going to go a long way, because if you all of a sudden start saying you're a big advocate of D&I and everyone's like, nah, you have not said anything until now, that's going to feel out of integrity and you're actually going to lose people. But when you own it and say, we have not been doing this, or wherever you are on this continuum, to just step out. And if you need educational resources, you know, we are here to help support organizations in that way. We've got some public events that we're doing for the first time. So even for, let's say, smaller companies that, you know, don't want to bring us in their own company one-on-one, but they just want to send 5 people or 20 people to a curriculum, we've got some public events and experiences that we're doing for the first time. So I would just go to ionlearning.com, follow us on LinkedIn. That's where we share most of all of our information. So just find Ion, and we can help get you the info that you need.
Siobhan, thank you so much. This has just been such a fun interview for me. And I love learning from you. And you're just, like I said, you're a remarkable woman. So keep shining your light and keep doing what you're doing, because you're making the world a better place.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. It's been so fun.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.